We run the desert podcast.
I like that.
We run the desert podcast. We run the desert.
Guys, it's We Run the Desert.
Yeah, that's perfect. All right.
The Desert Podcast. I'm your host, Eve, and I'm joined today by returning participant Megan Kupris, local runner, and another local runner, Ross Kiewit, who I just met for the first time. These two had an amazing pacing gig at Javelina, which was 2 weeks ago, and they got to pace an elite runner, and it was quite an incredible story that I don't even know all the details of yet because I was stuck in my crew tent helping my own runners and didn't see anything in the front happening. So they are going to tell us this exciting story. Kind of a belated play-by-play of things with the women's field at Javelina. So, Ross and Megan, thanks for coming on, and please take it away. You were telling me the story earlier of how you got into the pacing, so let's start from there.
Oh, yeah. So, this is pretty interesting. So, Javelina 100 is, like, a really big event here. people from all over the world come here because it is a golden ticket race. Especially, it's the 100 mile, specifically. 100K is still another amazing event. But, yeah, every year, I think, Ross, you go there, too, every year?
Yeah, I've been going out there for several years.
Yeah, so we're frequent visitors of this race. Always definitely on the cheer squad. Well, this year, I didn't have any volunteering lined up. I was just kind of actually going to go Saturday to the event because I had friends there. Always love watching the field.
Yeah, usually you come hang out in the RMC tent for a little bit.
So. Yeah, well, this year, we got sidetracked over to a pacing gig thanks to Chris Warden, who sent me a text message. I think it was like either Tuesday, Wednesday, early in the week of race week. Be like, hey, what are you doing on Saturday? I was like, well, I'm going to go to the race probably for a little bit. What's up? He's like, I got a pace gig for you. Do you want to pace someone? I was like, yeah, sure. Who is it? And he's like, it's Ragna Debats.
From Spain.
Debats, yeah.
Debats. I'm sorry, Ragna. We are not exactly sure as Americans how to pronounce your name. I'm so sorry.
I do apologize. It was really cool.
We love you anyway, though.
Yes. But yeah, I got a message then. It was either Tuesday or Wednesday night. And then I didn't hear anything until Friday. Thursday, because you met her, actually.
Yeah, it was on Thursday. I actually went to meet her, and she's like asking if I could do two laps. And I was like,
so two laps is 40 miles, listeners. So that's each lap. It's technically 19 miles. So 38 miles of pacing, which is a lot of pacing.
Yeah. And I was like, I thought you had a second pacer, according to Chris. And it's like, I could do one, two, it'd be a problem by about halfway through.
And I'm going to pause there to give our readers a little more backstory. So Ragna is a Western States winner. She's an elite runner. She's very, very fast. So pacing for her isn't like hiking or run walk. It's running, and it's running at a concerted pace and trying to maintain a very specific pace because she's going for a podium spot, or in this case, a golden ticket. And if you aren't familiar with ultras and Western States, golden ticket means you automatically qualify and get to run Western States, even if you didn't qualify off of anything the past year or get selected into the lottery. So yes, pacing. You didn't want to pace 38 miles at the elite level effort.
No, I knew by the second loop it would be as much of a problem for me.
Yeah, seriously, it's hard to do that for that long and stay focused on your runner.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely just the 19 miles. I just was like breaking some sweat just thinking about like, am I too fast? Am I too slow? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Nope, she's still there behind me. We're good. I'm not going too fast.
So how did you get, you got tapped in first, Ross, and then you asked Megan, or Chris asked Megan?
Yeah.
Chris messaged me. Did Chris message you?
Yeah, Chris messaged me and another friend at the same time, and ended up, he couldn't do it, so I guess he had reached out to other people too, and got two pacers, and that was it.
Okay, so she would have picked up the pacers at around mile 60. Who paced loop 4?
Megan? I volunteered loop 4 when we were chatting. So I actually was messaging her Thursday night, she had mentioned she'd met, like, met Ross, and then she was like, are you going to be there on Friday? I was like, oh, I have work. But we ended up talking a little bit, like, kind of pacing where to meet her on Saturday morning. And so when she was, like, describing, like, the pace she was shooting for, she's like, yeah, I want to go for, like, Camille Heron's record. I need a 5:35. And then quickly underneath that, kilometers per mile. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, what did I just sign up for?
That's hilarious. There is, like, a big difference between 5:35 miles per hour and 5:35 kilometers per hour.
Yes. So I did the conversion. I definitely did a sigh of relief. And I was like, okay, I can handle this right now.
Yeah. When I was meeting with her, I was asking, like, if she had a pace in mind. And she just casually said, yeah, Camille's pace. And she had it all broken down, like, each aid station, like, section of what the pace was. And
yeah, I got that message too. She literally had the breakdown of what it was, what she wanted. It was an average. She's like, yeah, it was like 5. Okay, so it was 5:35. So it was like 5:38, then 5:38 kilometers per mile, the uphill stretch up to Jackass, and then downhill was like a 5:18, 5:20 kilometers per mile. Coming down, you know, that fast back stretch of single track, which is where the Fireburn is. So it's kind of actually a little bit more twisty now. Now all the trees are gone.
It is a little different.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I don't remember this twist being here, but then maybe I just was totally
tinged. There's that one weird twist coming out of the like second wash that I don't think was there before.
I don't think so either. I was like, well, this adds a nice little twist to the course here. This is interesting. But yeah, when I was getting that whole full breakdown, I was like, oh man, we are on game mode. I got to get a little serious. I actually think I was more nervous for this than my actual race I did earlier this year, or even that 100K I ran.
There's some pressure when you're working with an elite and you have to, like, really nail the splits and everything on pacing. That's not easy.
And I didn't meet her yet. So I just had my imagination
established.
Now, this is Megan's imagination gone wild, thinking, oh, like, what have I done? But when I messaged Nathaniel, who knew of her, and I got positive feedback, she's like, oh yeah, she's awesome, she's so cool, you're gonna have so much fun pacing here. And I was like, okay, as long as I can breathe, we're gonna be fine, we'll be fine.
Nice.
Yeah, I kind of decided I wasn't going to pace this year for someone I didn't know. Uh-huh. I did last year and it went well and everything, yeah, but I didn't want to pace for someone I just randomly met.
It's a big commitment to take on that emotional toll, yeah, for someone else.
But so then when Chris messaged me, I recognized the name and he'd sent, and I looked on Ultrasign of, like, okay, this is someone who will be going fast. There's, yeah, not going
to
be a slow.
And I have to say that if you are a local runner, especially a speedy local runner, this is like a big advantage that, like a big privilege that you might get to have with Javelina. We always have elites dropping down for this at the last minute who need pacers. Like every year I can think of runners that I know who step up to pace elites at Javelina because they just need them. They come in last minute, something happens. So it's so cool that you guys got to do this. It's just very exciting. So, that's my cat meowing. So when you got to her, were you there at the race start, either of you, or did you just go up?
I sprinted in the long 45-minute car backup.
Yeah.
And then I parked about probably over 2 miles.
Parking was extreme.
It was. It was a parallel parking challenge. That was enough said right there. And then trying to sprint out, I grabbed everything I needed at least to get to the start. So I'm sprinting in like my puffer jacket, my shoes that I'm gonna, like, I think running, because I was like, I gotta be prepared. I'm gonna meet her before this goes off. And as I'm running by, like, the downstretch where you can see the start, I can hear her announcing. I'm like, well, so much for trying to meet her before the race. So I actually videotape the entire start, hoping in my video I could at least catch a glimpse of who I'm looking for.
Oh my gosh.
It worked.
Like, you didn't even.
It worked.
Okay, so you saw her at least in your video of the start.
The video start, thanks to meeting her, I think it was product design specialist.
Yeah, it was someone from her sponsor, Merrill, who was there crewing. He had crewed at Western States previous 2 years ago. So.
Yeah, so when I met him, I told him what I did. And we watched the video in slow-mo and he pointed out, her.
I was so like, you didn't actually see her when she was running. I just had it pointed out in a video
the whole time. That's all I did.
That's amazing.
I just said, go, let's go. And I'm looking and I saw Heather Jackson. I was like, okay, there's the first female. That doesn't help me right now because I don't know any other females really running right now other than like a select few where I was like, oh yeah. Oh, there goes a local runner. Oh, there goes one of my teammates kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I was like, dang, she must have went by so fast. I don't recognize her at all.
Yeah, I don't know what she looks like either. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, she had like on a hat mm-hmm. and like a sunshade kind of thing.
Oh, or so then you couldn't like even recognize her.
Well,
like
I knew any she had dark hair. Yeah. Yeah, I knew she had dark hair, but because everyone's dressed up in costumes, she kind of had a hat with little bear ears that lit up. And it would have been nice to know that, but at the same time, they were very tiny. So I don't even think I would have caught the idea that there was little bear ears because she actually was tucked behind Heather Jackson at the start from my video. And I was like, yep, totally would have missed that, even if I was like aware of who she was.
Oh my gosh. So then did you stay out there all day until pacing
sure
started?
Did.
Were you out there, Ross, during the day too? Or did you just go up in the evening?
Yeah, I got there when they're on the first loop. Okay. I wanted to be there for when she came when in she on came the first in. Loop.
Yeah, that's good. That makes sense too because you can get some of the chemistry and how she's feeling seeing her off loop one and two and three.
Oh, so. We learned a lot every loop.
Yeah.
Yep.
So tell me about it. What did you learn? How was it?
I'll let Ross go first.
Okay.
Yeah. The first time she came in, it was just the two of us and John, and he was really the only one who knew what she was going to do mm-hmm. for the aid station. So we were, you know, filling the gels, ice, and, you know, all the stuff. And she's telling us we need to go faster, like faster, faster, yeah. faster. So,
which is like very atypical for an ultra aid station. Yep. We're usually not like slinging stuff into the bags that fast.
So yeah, that was kind of set the tone for the day. Like, this is really serious. Like, she wanted to be in and out like as quick as possible. Mm-hmm.
She meant business when she came in that first lap. Like, it was, I mean, she came in at a reasonable pace. John, the sponsor from Merrill, he had everything laid out, handed us kindly the stuff and just said, when she comes through, she just wants to see everything laid out. Mm-hmm. We also didn't have a crew spot. We made one up.
What? You guys should have told me.
Yeah.
We would have put you in our tent. Oh my God. Oh. I can't believe you didn't have a crew spot.
So we
with
had
a
no shade
there?
The whole day. We borrowed an umbrella
Megan,
from our neighbors.
You should have texted me.
I was in panic mode. I after that first lap, I was
you know
in
we
full
have a tent.
Like,
so the next time you pace an elite without a tent, please come to our tent and we will happily share crew space with you.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
It did kind of work out because she did have something she wanted to eat like during the like infield loop that they do. So we were like way in the beginning so we could hand that off and
that's good.
Then have a few minutes to get everything.
You were
ready.
In the beginning close to the
aid station.
The aid station.
You know
yes.
that water
the side
thing
that
is?
We were on by the RVs.
Oh, yeah, we were right by like the Hoka zone
yeah.
and, the,
so
and then,
just,
like the general.
We always set our tents up on that same side for that reason. It's quieter and you get to see the runners and you've got like 3 minutes before they come back through. So that's really smart.
Yeah.
So they were strategically set up. The start finish of Javelina, each loop, you do this little horseshoe around what they call no man's land. And the left side of the horseshoe, I guess, is by the aid station and you circle the whole horseshoe to the right, touch the timing mat and come back through the whole horseshoe to head back out by the aid station again on your way back out to do the large loop. So if you're set up on the side of the horseshoe with the aid station, you see your runners and you have several minutes before they come back on their way out. So you can use it to, prep things and fill their pack while they're still running to hit the timing mat. I just gave away our crew secret. Now everybody's going to be gunning for the RV side next year.
They won't be gunning for ours. Ours is fully exposed. We had sun shirts on.
Yeah.
We drank water for the most part. Oh, at least I think I did.
I can't believe they didn't have a tent for her. Wow. That's nuts.
Well, he just flew in from Michigan the night before. So he was texting us like, hey, I'm going to get stuff. By chance, do you guys have like a cooler chairs to help, you know, save a little money for him to come over? And we definitely tried chipping in as much as we could.
Yeah.
I think.
Wow. So she added this race last minute then.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think it was like
a late entry. Then she just traveled here by herself.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So you guys really stepped up a lot to full on help, not just pacing.
Yeah, well, it was nice that they communicated what they needed to us too. So we knew how to execute it as well with that, her template that she like provided me of what she wanted pace wise, her goal. Like that first lap really set the tone of like how determined she was. Mm-hmm. And then
did she come in on pace from that first lap?
Fast. She came in fast.
Yes. Wow. Oh,
yeah.
She was cooler day than usual. So everything was running fast. So
yeah, because she was definitely trying to, I think, stay up with Heather Jackson. Mm-hmm. She stayed with her, I think, lap two pretty close as well. Wasn't too big of a time gap that one. It was, I think, lap three when things happened.
Things definitely got a little spicy on lap three. The women's field split up then.
Yeah. Coming in from lap three, like she'd been in second after lap one and lap two, and then lap three Heather had a bigger lead, and then she had actually was in third then. Mm-hmm. Like Riley Bradley had passed,
yeah,
so that was kind of, I know Regna said she was struggling with the heat all day.
Yeah, she called it I'm suffering, and I'm like, you know, that's a good verb for me to use when I'm like in pain. I'm like, instead of saying I'm in pain, I'm just saying I'm suffering. Please help me.
Sounds really
she was
nice.
Well, she came in just with such a like, the first two was very serious, very stern. But this one, you could tell she was having a lot more trouble piecing herself together.
Less mentally cognizant. That's definitely heat impact.
So when it was my turn, it was before she came in too, John was kind of filling me in of like, just like what I need to do. It looks like we're going to just, you know, keep it moving. She seems to be holding herself together. This is before we got the whole I'm suffering loop part in. I told him, yeah, we'll close the gap. We'll like make it doable. How hard could it be?
This is all gearing up for pacing loop four, right?
Yeah, this was hyping myself up to tell myself that everything was going to be fine, but also just like, I didn't really know what I was going to get. Like, was she going to keep up with me? Does she want the pace to be pushed? What kind of energy does she have? Like, I wasn't quite sure what to expect on that. So I just kind of went in, you know, what she had written out for her pace goals and tried keeping it as close as I could, listening to her cadence behind me, because I listened to her cadence and her breathing to be able to figure out, okay, she's matching me. I would push it a little bit. She's still matching me, and I would pull her that way. And then when I noticed I didn't see her as much, I would slow down, because her big thing to me going into the next lap was, I might not talk to you. I'm going to follow you and chase you.
Mm-hmm. So you're definitely pulling her along. That's what pulling is, when the pacer runs in front and they set the pace and the runner has to keep up. Pushing is if you run from behind, and usually then you're just trying to push your runner to do anything other than shuffle along. So you were pulling with the pace guide.
Yeah. And she said something else before that too, that stuck in my head, but I can't remember right now because I was just so focused that I wanted to make sure that she, one, stayed mentally present, and two, we were going to close that gap. Because when we left, I believe we had 6 minutes on second that we needed to go get, and 24 on first.
Okay. Wow, 24.
She put a gap on that. Lap three.
I remember hearing that at lap three because I didn't see anyone. Sometimes I would hear the cheers as the elites went by, but I remember hearing that. I want to back up a little bit. How long did she, before you headed out for loop four, since she was suffering from the heat, how long did she spend at the aid station that time? Was it longer? More time to cool down?
I think each one was an even split. Do you think so?
Yeah, it really was the same. Yeah.
Okay. She just acknowledged that she was suffering and then said, let's go.
Yep. And just fill up everything.
Okay.
Yeah, we did the same thing. She threw what she didn't need out of her, like, vest, whatever was on her.
Unloaded.
She basically, just took what she didn't use, put all new stuff in, and then just went out. She did her little shuffle pace up, and then she said a few times, I feel so slow. And I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, dude, we're going like 9:30 up a hill right now. I think we're doing all right.
That's hilarious. Okay, so 6 minutes back from second, and
24 behind first.
And she's chasing second at this point because that's the golden ticket that she's trying to earn to get the qualifier into Western States. So she doesn't have to necessarily win, has to snag second to get that golden ticket.
Yep. And the goal coming into the race was either first or second because it just was a golden ticket spot. So yeah, when I headed out, the first like 2 miles is that like coasty little roly poly, mm-hmm. little bit of rocky stuff before you cross the street. We were doing pretty good there. I was still kind of gauging where kind of her head was since she went into silent mode. And I was like, okay, she needs me to pull her. Oh, that was the thing. I had to stay in front of her a good amount of distance so she could chase me. Mm-hmm. She does better being in a mode where she's got to chase her runner down rather than the pacer being right by her. She's like, I get too comfortable and I slow down.
That's fascinating. And it's really interesting that she's so aware of that about herself. That's so fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the first things she told me when I asked her what she wanted to pace her was to be ahead because as she said, I'm kind of a lazy runner. I'll slow down if I don't.
Dude, I do that too. I really get that. I have to chase people or I will just not run fast. Like if somebody's not like literally making me run fast, I won't. It's really interesting to hear an elite say that they have to do that too.
Well, it was quite interesting too. So when we got to Coyote Camp, which is your first aid station, I think it's like roughly four and a half miles into the race. I think it's four.
Just over four.
We go through that, but half mile before, since I've run this loop so many times, I kind of knew. So half mile before, I kind of checked in with her just to see where she was at. Do you need anything? Like, what are we going to do? She just needed a little bit of ice and just refueling. I didn't do too much at that aid station mm-hmm. other than like alert the people being like, hey, I need ice. Where's the water? So I could get that ready by the time she came in. Mm-hmm. So every time when
so you ran ahead to the aid station,
I would run ahead to the aid station. Because again, I was like, well, if I run ahead, she's got to chase me up the hill. In this case, it was up a hill. And so she transitioned out of that smoothly. We start cruising. We get past the aid station, like, cluster zone. Mm-hmm. And we're going. And then all of a sudden, I hear stumble, fall. And I was like,
oh, my gosh.
Oh, no. That's my runner.
Oh, no.
I immediately turn around, and I could see it slow motion happening. She didn't fall hard, but she fell hard enough where, of course, the rocks in that area are
just... That's the rocky part of the course, too.
Yeah. So she stumbled, tripped. I went back, checked on her. She got up, like... super fast. I said, shake it off. Let's go. Sure enough, she got her head down, started going. I was like, dang, I wish I had that mentality. I would have probably been laying there a couple seconds, definitely assessing if I broke anything.
She's like, I'll assess on the move.
So once she started moving, I was like, well, let's keep moving because I don't want any of the pain to like suddenly be like, oh, look, I'm hurting. It's like, no, you're suffering in a different way. We're going to get to Jackass now.
And she wasn't really talking at all this whole time. You guys weren't chatting. It was just game face, game mode.
And I mean, like it was game mode until a switch hit. So we coasted through all that twisty turny part to Jackass, which is a lot of hill climbing in this Pemberton loop for a flatter course. And so we made it to Jackass Junction and I get there and before, again, half mile before I check in with her, she's like, I'm hot. I need all the ice. I need water. She like needed all the things. So I was like, ooh, that changed. Yeah. So I quickly ran down.
So this is mile 70 and you're halfway through your pacing loop at this point.
Yes. And so I go straight to Jackass Junction. I start I told Ragna, get water. I'm going to get the ice because I noticed the ice clear on the other side of the aid station. The volunteer was super awesome. He like probably was part of the game changer here. I grabbed ice. He gave me a bucket. I run over to the water where she's getting herself, you know, hydrated. I start shoving the ice in all her little pouches. The volunteer actually came over and started helping me fill her cap, her pack with ice to help cool her down. Mm-hmm. And then we doused her with the sponges once we brought the bucket back over so that way she could shuffle on over. And then she just came to life. Suddenly we went up the hill.
Nice. You got her core temperature cooled. Nice.
And well, that's probably maybe why she was suffering.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Because then I told her, I was like, oh, we're going to go to my favorite part. I love this part of the course. It's
right
so
when
fast.
You go over that hill. And oh, she, that's about, well, not quite where I saw you when we were doing the night race. It was a little later than that, but yeah.
Yeah, we were after the, I think, exit of the fire.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Then the ground came normal. Mm-hmm. But with her, I told her like, yeah, this is my favorite part. And she's like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, this is the fun, smooth, single like track stuff. It's going to be nice and coasty. And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I enjoyed this part. And so she started talking a little bit more. And she's like, I feel comfortable now, like with you pacing me. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I'm glad. I'm like, is this like you want me to stay this far, like this distance? She's like, yeah, I need to chase you. So we're coasting. We're doing the little switchy swerve. And suddenly out of the blue, this photographer, GoPro, I don't know, some guy comes running by us and was like, seconds 1 minute away.
Oh my gosh.
First is 17 minutes away.
Oh man.
And
so
her
she
face
over 5 minutes.
And her face was like, really? And I hear her and I'm like, oh boy, I got to keep the pace controlled though, because mm-hmm. another aid station's coming up. If we pass second before the aid station, it's going to throw my strategy off. So I see the guy taking the video photo. I hear Ragna like being like, wow, I feel so slow, but we're moving so well. She didn't say fast. She said, well, and I was like, good. I'm glad she's still talking and telling me good things. Like she just had some conversation flow going that was just making me feel much better. Mm-hmm. So then I had to calm myself down because I was like, oh God, this is getting exciting. And suddenly I hear her say, is that her? And I look up and I'm like, oh my God, it's the right red jersey. Because the whole time I'm pulling her through the coyote aid to Jackass, I was actually looking for the red jersey that mm-hmm. Riley was wearing. And I didn't see it. I'd look up a couple of times. I'm like, nope, too big. Nope, that's another guy. Wrong person. And so when I looked up that time and saw it, I was like, dang, they're moving pretty darn good. But we're only a half mile away from the aid station. We just got to keep it chill. So I kept them in eyesight, and I could hear Ragna was starting to like get closer on our gap. I was like, okay, I know she's got to chase me, but we're so close to the aid station right now. Mm-hmm. So once we got into the aid station, I quickly was like, I need ice for my runner because she still wanted ice on her. She wanted to be doused. The sun is setting, by the way. It gets cold in the desert.
I know,
I was
shocked.
Such
a tricky time right there, right when the sun's setting to re-ice.
Ugh. So she wanted it. So we just did a light icing because she didn't need like the physical ice. She just needed the ice bath. And I actually had to because I realized my core temperature was going up because I was getting so worked up. I was like, oh my God, like we're about to pass second right now. Like we're going back in like contending like spot right now.
Oh my gosh, that's
so when she saw that, she's like, go. And we went after that. Like we just started hauling it. So we went from, I'm using American units now. We went from like nine, we started at 11 pace, got down to 9:30.
The coyote or rattlesnake or going into rattlesnake.
So we started 11 at that loop, 11 minute pace, okay. Climbing to coyote to 9:30 pace to Jackass. We then dropped it to 8:10 pace. Dude. We were going 8:10 pace. And that's she called nice. That's when she said, we're moving slow.
Well.
And then, well, I'm like, yes.
8:10 pace at like 75, almost 80 miles in to this race. That's
yeah.
Just amazing.
So we leave the aid. I think I'm still holding about 8:12, 8:20 pace from when I looked at my Strava splits, because I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I literally was running by feel and just was like, stay in the zone, make sure she's behind you, clear the path, because
really
we had to make
pulling.
Sure all the paces,
so cool.
Paces were over. And then finally, when we got to the rocky turn, I think mm-hmm. when you go, mm-hmm. I forgot what exactly that trail is.
Escondido's to the side there. Yeah.
So it gets rocky again, and that's when our pace slowed. But I had to, again, have that conversation. I'm like, do you need me to go to the finish with you? Do you need anything else when we go by the aid mm-hmm. station? So she had me run to the finish. I yelled over to John and Ross and was just like, we're going to the finish. she definitely is moving well. And I was like, I think I tried saying like, Ross, you got to stay like in front of her.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, because during the loop, we were able to follow the live tracking. Mm-hmm. We could see like each aid station, you get closer and closer. And then at Rattlesnake, it's like 10 seconds, like they're there together.
So did she come, did you pass before you hit this, like before you came in? So you still came in third.
We came in third to at the end of loop four.
Rattlesnake, you were third, and then you moved into second before you got back to the start finish.
Right. So at Rattlesnake, Riley was still in the tent when we left, because that's when Ragnar was like, go.
Okay, so that's when she dropped the hammer. And
Kept dropping the hammer. We were still holding that pace because it no longer goes down after that. It starts plateauing and does that like up and
it
down
does,
again.
Yeah.
And so I was surprised I was even holding that, because I told her after the fact, like, so that was my longest run for the entire year. Just to let you know.
I didn't know that. That makes sense, though. Because Megan, if you remember from our last time she was on here, is coming off of a year-long injury and is rebuilding from that. And has been zipping around, setting records all summer and fall in the sub-ultra distances locally, but not running 20 milers.
No, I've not been touching the ultras. So that's why, again, running this for pacing, I mean, like, I was going to accept any pacing, but when I heard this one, I was like, oh, this will be a fun loop. Yeah. Like, we're going to go fast. And then I started looking at, you know, my own, like, training log, and I was like, oh, wow. I remember the last time I ran 20 miles, to be honest.
That's
but
awesome.
I will do whatever it takes. Because on our lap, too, it was during when she was feeling well. I trust you so much. Are you going to be doing the second lap with me? I was like... No. In my head, I was like, oh man, in my dreams, but right now I have to pass you off to my next
I think even a lot of the runners I work with, about half of them are like doing their first ultras, and so we talk a lot about learning how to pace or learning how to work with pacers. And I generally advise my runners not to pace more than 20 or 25, especially if they're new to the sport, because it's very hard to stay as sharp as you need to pace more than that. And even for you, even if you were moving well, just to be able to do the heavy math and the heavy focus on those splits and going into the dark, that would have been hard just mentally to stay that sharp for a second loop.
And also telling every runner to move, because that was a big thing. She needed the path cleared with her because she was so focused. I mean, like there was about, I can count on my hand. There was three runners where I had to turn around because I saw her coming and they came behind me, because I'd always say two runners behind, two runners behind. I got two runners behind, because if I said runners, I noticed they would move back over because again, I had to have that gap so she could chase me. So I noticed one, when I did still say two runners come back and like cut behind me, I was like, one more runner behind me. Like, I just want to make sure she doesn't fall again.
Yeah, I would have been like, elite runner coming in hot. I would have been screaming at all of them to move. You were a lot nicer and softer spoken than I would have been, for sure. Were they dudes?
I don't remember. I just remembered I was so focused at not losing her because I did, because I was so worried I was going to like zone out, because I do that when I run, and I just kind of start zoning out and going in the flow that when I run with people and they're quiet, I forget. Because I'm used to being a very talkative runner, so that I know I'm going my easy pace. That's why I talk when I run. But yeah, I just was like, don't lose your runner. Don't lose your runner. Just keep talking to every runner to move while you listen to your runner behind you.
Nice. So you came in second place and handed her over to Ross for the last loop.
Yes, and we did some damage by the time that second loop started.
Yeah, so how much of a gap? So you closed the 6-minute gap, overtook. How much of a gap did you head out for with loop five, final loop?
6 minutes.
It was, we were gone before Riley came in, as far as I know. I was like looking over my shoulder as we were filling ice and doing the crew work. I kept like looking to see if she came.
So you would have had probably at least 4 minutes on her. That
we put
them,
6 minutes actually.
6 minutes. So 12.
Because that whole horseshoe loop took her a lot longer to leave where Ragnar had left and departed with Ross. Because John had like John had the timer going. He knew what was.
Yeah, like usually it's 2 to 3 minutes if you go in and out quickly, and it's 5 to 6 if you take a moderate stop there. So
yeah, she took a moderate one, I remember, because she looked, I mean, like, I didn't get a good look at her. It just was awful because when I left Rattlesnake, I made full on eye contact through each other's sunglasses into Riley's, I think, eyes. Oh. And I was like, bye. Good job.
Oh. You're like, you're also so amazing. I'm sorry.
Like, sorry.
Sorry, we're crushing your dreams, but I'm helping someone else get theirs.
I felt so bad because I think she got third last year, too.
No.
She had got a golden ticket last year. Yeah. She was second, I think.
Because there was some, because they ran non-binary last year, but had to put the special qualification in for the gender ticket for golden ticket. So yes, definitely took the golden ticket last year. I can't remember first or second though.
I still was going to feel so bad.
Second, because it was Devin Yanko was first last year.
Oh my gosh, yeah. How did I forget that Devin took first?
Yeah, I just felt so bad because I thought it was going to be another year of like, oh my God, she's going to get third all because I like just totally wanted to help her get hers from all the traveling she did just to even get here.
Oh. So you had, Ross, you had a 6-minute lead and you were trying to hang on to that golden ticket spot. No pressure.
Yeah, and I had no idea what our lead was besides I didn't see when Riley came through. So, and it was like right as it was getting dark. Because as we left, Regna's like, oh, I didn't get it. She's like, headlamp. John was holding his eye to turn. Gosh. We were like,
he still had it on his arm.
I was like the aid station. So I quick turn around and like, John, you need the headlamp. And he's like looking around. I'm like, it's in your hand.
Yeah, we even had it too where we're like, the light. I remember coming back. No. We need the light.
So we got that and then just starting out. Yeah, it was just like, felt like you're clearing the way because luckily we got started before the night race.
Oh my gosh,
it was like 15 minutes before it started, I think. So that would have made it even a lot tougher if we had a couple hundred more runners on the course.
I can't imagine that.
So
coming in hot behind y'all.
So yeah, it was just running and yelling. Two runners coming through on your left. And
she was chasing you the whole time?
Yeah, I just kind of got ahead and trying to keep, you know, a gap for her to chase after. And then we were cruising along and then there was like a bike following us for a long time. And I thought it was like the live stream or something, but it ended up not being. It was just like a random bike.
What? Mike, be out on that course. There are thousands of people out there. Like, why would you ride your bike? And at night, too?
It was like, it wasn't dark yet, but it was dark enough to need a headlamp.
That's super weird. Hey, random biker, don't go out on the Javelina course during race weekend.
Halloween weekend, just avoid Pemberton.
Yep. For real. And then as we were going, just getting closer to the first aid station at Coyote Camp, it's just asking, like, what do you need here? What are we doing? And it was just quick, like real quick, fill up a water bottle and keep going. And then as we were going up the hill, you know, passing people, we all of a sudden got passed, but it was the night.
Oh my gosh. Also, it
scared me. I was startled by someone passing us, but it was one of the guys in the night race. So
for the listeners, if you aren't familiar with Javelina, there's a night 31K. 31K. So it's not the entire...
It's just the entire loop.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I guess I don't pay attention to it. It's one loop of the course and it starts just after sundown and it puts a lot of very enthusiastic costumed runners on the course. Really, the race is kind of like a thank you for all the local runners who do volunteering and stuff so you can go out and participate in it even if you're not pacing or crewing. But if you're out there running in any capacity, it is a little bit overwhelming to have those very loud and boisterous runners come in at the end of your race. So, so they started passing you, the front runners.
Yep. And then, so we got passed a few times we got passed by the first female, which was Nicole. So a friend of mine. So we were like giving a high five. And then later Regna, the first thing like she said to me basically is like, are we being overtaken? I'm like, no, these are just night runners.
That
no
had one to be in. So scary for her. Like
we haven't been passed by anyone. And then I was pulling up the live tracking on my phone.
I'm surprised you could get signal because we couldn't get signal. It was too jammed up by too many users back at like HQ area. So
yeah, it was definitely better out on the course.
Nice.
It was loading much faster. So yeah, it was like, then I noticed we had like a 15-minute gap, I think, after once Riley came through Rattlesnake. So
ahead of third by 15 minutes.
So at that
going
point,
into the mile 90.
Yeah. And then we just were cruising along and getting to Jackass. And it's like, again, what do we need to do? Mm-hmm. And she's still like, I'm hot. I need to cool down. So we didn't do ice, but we did like the sponge ice water. And
even was it dark yet?
Yeah, it was completely dark.
Oh my gosh. Local runners would have been freezing by then.
Yeah, it was definitely, was not feeling that warm, but
yeah,
she had a metabolism going
just from, yeah, I guess when you're 90 miles in, your effort level is just a lot higher to keep the pace. And so then, yeah.
What kind of pace were you running then?
I actually changed my watch to kilometers for that just so.
Oh gosh.
Because I can convert the distance between aid stations better than I can convert paces.
Yeah, I can't convert pace off the top
of my
head to
cams. So I was just going off. It was in the six 6 minute kilometer.
I guess I could pull up here.
I think it was
nine, Strava.
It was nine something. Yeah. We averaged
between
like
9 and 9:30 probably.
Yeah, it was what we kind of averaged for the full loop.
5:35 was 8:52. And we came in 2:57 for our lap. And I think you were like
3:07, 3:05.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, she was still moving hot for a dark last 20 miles.
Okay. So now we have to say you increased the lead by 3 minutes ahead of Riley in third place. Were you closing the gap on first? And did you know that going into Jackass?
It was about the same.
Okay.
So I was still at 25 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. And then, and after Jackass, once we were heading down in that burned area, it was kind of hard to follow. And in the dark, because there's nothing anymore. It's just sand.
Yeah. That's the last time we saw each other by the way, Megan, at the night race, which we didn't even talk there. It was just when you passed me. That area is weird at night.
Yeah. It was at one point I'm like, where do I go? And luckily someone's like, that way straight.
Oh
I'm like, okay.
And you're moving fast too. So it's not like you're like out there sweeping over your headlights, looking around. Yeah.
The course markings right there didn't have the reflector. They'd fallen off. So there's like nothing. I was like, where do I go?
Wow.
Yeah, I think part of the area too had to be like they couldn't really quite go off course yet either, because we had to still keep it on the protective burn site.
Yeah, and I remember for the night race that area wasn't marked as well. I don't know if it's because it's burnt and they can't fix things as well, but I remember that too. I was like, I'm just running through this silt here.
And there's like no plants at all.
It looks sort of like a black and white movie when you're running it at night, because it's all grayscale. So it's weird and eerie, but also sort of cool.
Well, a lot more of the cacti were down too. So I noticed that it was a lot more wide open from even our race.
Really?
There was a couple of the barrel cactuses that I had taken pictures of. They were completely uprooted off the ground. Like, not, you couldn't even see a hole in the ground. I'm just like, this is really weird. It's just like someone just picked it up and just tossed it to the side.
Crazy. Okay. Yeah. So you're at Jackass.
Yep. And then we were, on the downhill section. So definitely picking up the pace a little, just the downhill. And then I checked again, and realized we had like 20 minute lead. So like at that point, it's like, as long as we keep moving,
just increasing that gap. Yeah.
So I kind of knew at that point, less than 10 miles to go, as long as we keep moving, we're staying second place. So we were just going along. And
that's so cool.
Yep. It was a little difficult at night, like keeping track where she was behind me when you'd pass people, because I would kind of keep track of the light, but then there would be other lights and it was.
Yeah. I think that the night race makes that hard too, because it puts so many fast moving lights out there, and then you can't see the 100-mile field as well. So, anything going into Rattlesnake?
No, it was just again, cool down and refill a water bottle, and that was.
So how was bringing her into the finish, knowing that she had secured that golden ticket? And did she relax at any point?
Not really.
No.
Nope.
She was like, let's just go.
Not till the finish line. Okay. I don't think. It was
that
like, let's just keep going.
Too, with her mindset, I think she wanted to lay down the hammer and be like, watch out.
I mean, it sounds like it. If she was increasing that lead on the entire last loop, she was just throwing down.
Yeah, and I guess I hadn't talked to her. Like, did she want to know? So I was like, I was keeping this to myself, knowing like what the gap was. Just it was mainly for me because I was so nervous in the beginning. Like, I have no idea. And when it's dark, you just don't know. You can't see it till they're like past you.
Yeah. So wow. So what was the finish like? What was the horseshoe like running with her coming in that second place finish?
Once we got like, you kind of come out of the wash up to the finish line area, and then we could see John and Megan like jumping up and down basically. So like, okay, this is, we made it now. So we just had to do the last horseshoe. And
that's awesome. Did, were they commentating when she came in about getting the golden ticket or anything?
I don't remember.
I don't remember hearing it. So but I'm not sure.
I do know that once she crossed the finish line, it, like, they got really good pictures of her with like her big, like big arms going, just like, yes. Like she did it. It was so cool. Cause Howie was like right there too. Yeah. Taking his, of course.
Yeah. He got some amazing finish line pictures of people.
So she got really good ones of Ragnar. Just like, you could just see her excitement. Like, she came and conquered and did what she wanted to do. And then she just like, the game face came off and she was just like, she was normal.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Then she was
like, okay, she's
just had a huge smile on after like the whole day. It was just super serious. Like,
and then she just like turned off game face and was like a normal. That's so cool.
Yeah. Cause the next day we actually met up with John and Ragna to celebrate her golden ticket achievement. And yeah, she just, the game face was completely gone. She was just this really sweet, funny, like still had some nonchalant me like, oh yeah, I have like this major accomplishment. Oh yeah, I won Western?
No, she was third.
She was third.
It was the Masters record.
She was Masters record third overall, which is,
she won a race that she told me that she was very proud of, and I just was like, holy crap.
I know she won, it's in Morocco. It's like the marathon, the Saab. It's like a stage race or something.
Yeah.
She won the Istria 100 in April of 2022. She won the 125K Trans Gran Canaria in March of 22. Those were, and then she took third in Western States 2021.
She has a World Masters thing or a World. She did something with Worlds. And I think it was in
2017. Back that far was the Trail World Championships. 50K.
Was she first in that?
No, she was fourth. Matterhorn, Run the Rut, Coastal Challenge, 236K. Oh, here it is. The IAU World, the Trail Championships in Castellón de la Plana. She was first.
That was the one she's very proud of.
Yeah, that was earlier in her career. She was only 39 then. So I want to say that because I am a master's runner. I am 44 and about to turn 45 and feeling like I'm at the end of my career. She was 44 when she chased down that golden ticket. She was 42 when she took third at Western States. Last year's winner was also women's winner, was also a master's athlete. And I believe Camille was very close to 40 when she won it too. 38, 39, maybe 40. So all you older runners, don't give up hope. Keep putting in the work because you still have time to be amazing.
I feel the same way, Roz.
You two young things in front of me, Megan and Roz, these little whippersnappers here, you have so much time ahead of you to crush it.
That's in no amazing. Hurry for ultra though. That's why I'm like, they're all good. There's still plenty of time.
You've got like 15 years left, you little thing. But it's really as an older athlete, it is very heartening to see that there's still room for us in the sport because it's not like that with many things. So it's very, very cool to see not just that there's room for older athletes, but still dominance. Ah, it's so cool.
Like even, what was it, 2 years ago with the golden ticket for even the men's field? Mm-hmm. Like I think it was top two of the three or all three were.
I think so too.
Masters. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, I know at Black Canyon last year, Chuhart and Scott were both like over 40.
And Scott last year, well, in 22, set the 100K record, I think, as a masters athlete. So
Scott,
this sport
unreal.
Really is, you know, forgiving and gives a long runway. And yeah, it's awesome. Oh, that's just what I needed. I'm all excited now. So is there anything else you guys want to share about like the celebration or the award ceremony with her or anything from after?
Yeah, I missed the award ceremony, but I did make it for celebrating afterwards for her huge accomplishment. And yeah, listening to her just like coming out with a goal in mind, and she laid it down. I mean, like, even John knew her so well, like he knew, like he actually, I think, did a really good job coaching us, just giving feedback about her as a runner, knowing her mindset, knowing her grit and determination. And then the next day he just was like, he was even over the moon, just like stoked about like, guys, we
that's
did
pretty
it.
Cool to see a corporate sponsor that invested in their athlete, actually.
Oh yeah, like, it was so nice. Cool, like, wow. They even designed her shoe specifically for this race to trial run.
Oh my gosh.
And she was, I mean, like,
oh. So she trial ran a shoe and also chased down a golden ticket.
She didn't change her shoe once, she said.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's exciting. Nice. Anything else to add, Ross?
No, it just was like a totally different experience than what I'm used to. It's just,
yeah,
everything, a lot more pressure. I was definitely more nervous for this than any race because it really means something. Like, each place means something.
Yeah.
Where it's, normally it's like, oh, it doesn't matter if you
no,
pass
normally
the
you're
first
just trying to get them moving.
You're
and,
more
you
worried
know,
about your time
yeah,
than
that's
place.
Very different perspective.
Even for your first 100-mile race this year that you got to do.
Yeah, he was telling
like
me about
be,
that earlier.
I know. I'd feel so just like intimidated, I feel like, by the 100-mile. Like,
I know. So Ross ran his first 100-miler this year. It was high lonesome, and he did it in 27 hours. And that is just a really strong, strong first debut 100-miler period, especially a high-altitude mountain race. So well done, well done. I am really looking forward to seeing where you guys go from here and the rest of your very long, sure to be illustrious ultra career. Can you guys each give your social handles and, if you want to, what your next race is, so our listeners can follow along? Megan, you probably have one. Do you are you running tomorrow at Pass?
What's to, oh,
Pass Mountains tomorrow. Are you racing it? By
no.
the way, it's tomorrow if you are.
No, because I totally forgot.
It's a weekend earlier than it usually is.
Okay.
Year.
Oh, because next weekend's Black Canyon training run. Right, I think
so. Yeah,
and
I'm pretty sure.
Thanksgiving's real early.
Yeah,
this year
everything's
too.
Like yes. Black Canyon's a week earlier than it is too.
Yeah.
Normally, so everything's up a week.
So no to that as my next race. I have the Black Canyon training run to participate in because I will do Black Canyon 60K.
You're gonna be out there for the 60K?
Yeah, because I still have PTSD from the 100K.
I'll see you at the finish. I'll be out there just to see people finish for that
I just want to get what I did during that 100K. I PR'd in my 100K for the 60K, and I paid for it, and I learned a lot of lessons that third half of Black Canyon.
That is the story of Black Canyon. I'm sure you probably learned. I have also learned those lessons in Black Canyon.
My Pacers can hold me accountable for that. They were pushing me, not pulling me.
Megan, what's your social handle?
I just mainly use Instagram. It's MKUPRES22. So it's, my last name. Tutu.
Awesome. And Ross, your social handle and your next race, if you have one.
I don't really have any race coming up soon, but I am running Crown King Scramble in the spring.
Oh, in March. Nice.
Yep, in March.
I've never run that one.
I haven't
It's
either.
Like one of the few that I've never run. Lots of uphill.
Yeah, it's all uphill, which is... why I wanted to run it.
And are you on Instagram?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's KIEWIETR, just my last name and then R. So.
Awesome. Well, give these guys a follow. They are definitely going places. Thank you for sharing the story. It was very, very exciting to hear because I had no idea that any of this was going on during the race. And I'm just very excited that our local runners got to help with that. So thanks a lot. This was another episode of We Run the Desert podcast.